All right, I want to start off with the map up here. So that's where I'm getting that set up. So, all right, so Genesis 20 is where we are. I'll read through the chapter, and then we'll interact with the map, get some context, and interact with the map a little bit, and then work our way through the text. All right, from there, would be Mamre, which is from chapter 18, verse 1. From there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman you have taken, for she is a man's wife." Now Abimelech had not approached her. So he said, "Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart. And it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, so that he will pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told them all these things, and the men were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you see that you did this thing?" Abraham said, "I did it because I thought there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, 'This is the kindness you must do me. At every place to which we come, say of me, he is my brother.'" Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen and male servants and female servants and gave them to Abraham and returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, "Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." To Sarah, he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you. And behold, and before everyone, you are vindicated." Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and his female slaves so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Okay, does that sound familiar to anybody? Where does that sound? I mean, not in personal experience, hopefully. As far as Genesis goes, does that sound familiar? And if so, where? Where does that... Yeah, when they were in Egypt. So at the end of chapter 12, right? And does anybody remember the circumstances there? Why did they go to... That's just after, basically, they had gotten into Canaan. Why did they get up and go from Canaan to Egypt? Famine. Yeah, it was a great famine in the land, right? So there was insecurity there. There was a lack of provision, seemingly. Abraham goes, and that happens there, but there's not the interaction, right? Pharaoh finds out somehow, and then there's not the extended dialogue between Abraham and Pharaoh like there is between Abraham and Abimelech. And so it's like a shortened version. But out of that, Abraham is blessed. He gets material provisions, so on and so forth. So he becomes great as a result of that event. And so, but what did that lead up to? When he got back into chapter 13, they got back into the land in Canaan. Lot is with him, and what happens in chapter 13? What does Abraham and Lot talk about in chapter 13? They split up, and it's regarding the issue is regarding what? The land. So this is and this is one of the promises that God gives to Abraham is land. The other one, the other promise that is, actually has like material attached to it or something physical attached to it would be the seed, right? So there's blessing, there's land, seed, and blessing. So what's going on? And sorry, let's back up with the land issue that becomes kind of resolved in chapter 14, going into chapter 15, and then the that's promised by God and that's going to be fulfilled. It's going to be fulfilled one day in the future. That's part of the terms of the covenant in Genesis 15, the announcement of slavery in another land, but I'll bring your descendants out of that slavery and plant them in this land, give it to them. So that addresses that. But where are these people going to come from? Where are these descendants going to come from? And that's what Genesis 15 through where we are now is all about, is the seed promise, the descendant promise, specifically that Abraham's going to have a son. And so they have, first, God promised that Abraham was going to have a son, specifically coming from his body. That's in Genesis 15. And then in the 16, you have, well, okay, Sarah's not going to have the boy, the son, so use Hagar. And it's actually heart-wrenching what happens in the next chapter from Abraham's point of view with Genesis 21. But God says, no, it's not going to be Ishmael. It's going to be through Sarah. So Sarah is going to have your son, right? And that came out in chapter 17. And then also it's reaffirmed in chapter 18. And that brings us up to where we are. There was in chapter 19 getting Lot, addressing Lot's situation, getting him a resolution from his story within Genesis. And now the focus is back on Abraham. And in between Genesis 18 and the Lot episode is Sodom and Gomorrah. And the thing as far as Sodom and Gomorrah goes for Abraham is that he's this intercessor, right? And he has insight. He's given insight into God's plans and God's purposes. And we see the fruit of that in this chapter where he's called a prophet. So a lot of these things have been setting up for this. And no matter where Abraham goes, and seemingly no matter what he does, God blesses him. And there's no curse. It's just, it's blessing. Now, there is what's the word? It's not reproach, but there is rebuke, right? So walk blameless before me, chapter 17. There is rebuke for his actions, but none of the blessing is taken away. Because there was never this if, like, Abraham, you have to hold up your end of the bargain, right? There was never this if with him. Now, he does obey, and we see that throughout. And so we come to chapter 20, and we see another episode that's very much like this, very much like the episode that we saw in chapter 20, with calling Sarah, the seed promise being in jeopardy because Sarah is taken as another man's wife. And so the geographical issue is what we'll look at now. So just looking at this atlas. So can everybody see the little hand here, right here, where I'm circling around the Dead Sea, kind of? Okay. So this is about the area of where they were. Okay. So the Oaks of Mamre. This is where the cities of the valley, you can actually see that where the valley is between these two ranges. And actually, I can do this Presentify thing, so I'm going to do that. Okay. So this is where this is the valley. So the Oaks of Mamre would have been somewhere in here. And then we have in chapter 20, he goes, he journeys and he settles somewhere between Kadesh and Shur. So here is Shur. Right here is Shur. And then Kadesh would probably be this Kadesh Barnea. And then, so he's going around in this area. And then he ends up, so he's going from about here, and then he goes back around into the area of Gerar. The end of chapter 21, there's going to be a covenant between Abimelech and Abraham, and that's going to happen at Beersheba. So this is the area. This is southern, southwest, and south land of Canaan going into the Sinai Peninsula. And so that's where we are. So does that help to see where all of this stuff is happening? What do we know about this area geographically or the conditions of the land in this area?
Well, it's kind of green on the map.
So. It's kind of green on the map. So there's got to be tons of pasture lands and water and all that stuff, which is not the case, right? This would be, so in the Negev, this is like the southern, this area of the land of Canaan, of the promised land is not, it's totally dependent on water. It doesn't have much of its own, any springs or anything like that. And so it's totally dependent on rain falling in order for the land to bear any fruit. So it's pretty sparse. Now, when you get over into this area, this is a valley. This is pretty nice. So this would be where Gaza is. But in this area, you're looking at wilderness. So you see, Abraham he's kind of nomadic, going from place to place, and that opens him up to issues of security and protection from time to time. And it seems like that's what is going on here. So he journeys toward the Negev, so that would be that south part, and then he's between Kadesh and Shur, which is in the Sinai Peninsula, and then he sojourns in Gerar. So he goes back up to the north. To the north. All right, so he's still in southern Canaan, but he's kind of south southwest, but he's traveled north. There's kind of a reminder of where he is as far as Egypt goes. He's been in Egypt. Things turned out well, but how that actually happened, how that came to be, was morally. Was morally corrupt and also deceptive. And we see Abraham doing the same thing now. Abraham said of Sarah, so he's saying to other people, she is my sister. Now, there's an issue here with the historical background of like, what is going on here, right? Because you get to the end of chapter 20, Abimelech already has a wife. And there are also female slaves are involved. So, and Abimelech's a king. So we know that polygamy did happen. And it was going on during this time. But what is Abimelech as this king of this people, this ruler of this people, what's going on? How does he have so many women at his disposal, so to speak?
Isn't that a sign of power?
Sign of power. Yeah, sign of power. Sign of authority. Sign of...
Greatness.
Yeah. We would call this when one man has a whole house full of women, we would call it, in an ancient context, we would call this a harem, right? So that's what's about to happen. So that's the direction this is going. But that doesn't actually demand that Abraham say anything about Sarah being his sister. So what's going on here? And this is where some of the historical background comes in. Let's fast forward a few centuries to Solomon. What was the problem, or what did Solomon do in taking an Egyptian wife?
He took foreign wives, and then he built temples for them.
Right. Now, politically, what was he doing? He was disobeying God, but
he was making alliances with other
countries. Right. He's making alliances, right? So that was obviously at a big scale, large scale. But they were always kind of the daughters of these other rulers, right? Now, what happens if you don't have a daughter? You give your sister. If you want a relationship, a diplomatic relationship with this ruler, with this authority, then you give your sister. So what Abraham is doing here is that, okay, he's been going around, and this is definitely Abraham at a, this is a weak point, this is a terrible point, this is a low point. But what he's doing is he's arranging for there to be a diplomatic relationship between Abimelech and himself that would secure pasture land for his livestock, would secure water rights, and then also would provide protection, which is an interesting thing. If that's in his mind, as far as I need protection, this is the same guy who took 318 of his own men and stampeded across four kings from the east. So what in the world is going on here with Abraham? And you just can't explain. I mean, he is sinning. This is treachery. This is deception. And so how can you explain that? You know, how can you rationalize that kind of thing? But that is what's going on here, is that he's trying to establish diplomatic relationship, solidify a political relationship. And this usually did involve the creating of a treaty or covenant. That is what happens in Genesis 21. So it actually turns out that it's what he does here is not necessary with how it turns out. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20, but still, Abraham is terrible here. He doesn't have a daughter to offer, so he offers who he says is his sister. Now, why would Abimelech not, if he knew that Sarah was Abraham's wife, why would Abimelech not agree to this? I mean, it's in this chapter. Why would he not agree to it?
Sin.
What?
It's a great sin.
Yeah, it's a great sin. He calls it a great sin, and what's the sin itself?
Adultery,
right? And so, and that is... that is capital offense, and it's actually recognized as sinning against God, and obviously in a biblical worldview, sinning against God. But also, it would in Gerar's or in Abimelech's worldview, there would be sinning against the gods. Now, obviously, he's confronted by the one true God, and that changes some things for him, or exposes some things to him. Just one more note on this, because Isaac does the same thing in Genesis 26. He says of Rebekah, she's my sister. The reason, and he does that in the same place, perhaps to the same king. Like it's Abimelech in Genesis 26. Now, Abimelech could be a title for a king. So just like Pharaoh is a title for the king of Egypt, Abimelech may be the title of a king amongst the Philistines or whatever, because I think David runs into an Abimelech later on. Is that true? Am I just making that up?
So there's two.
I think there's another Abimelech that comes up, and it's in 1 Samuel. But I may be getting that confused.
So all the other women in his harem weren't wives of other men.
Right. Yeah. They were all his. Yeah. There wasn't any
single woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, so they some of them may have been given in the same kind of, under the same kind of circumstances, so their concubines given by another ruler, or if and that's one way to do it, not a married woman for sure, but it was actually to be offered the daughter of another ruler, that was a greater thing than to be offered a concubine, because that, I mean, that really means there's something there to the relationship. But that diplomatic relationship only lasts as long as both parties are alive. So Abraham dies, and that's why Isaac doesn't get grandfathered into this arrangement. He sets up his own, right? Doing the same thing that his dad did. All of that is kind of background to make this point as far as verses 1 and 2 goes, the first part of verse 2. So Abraham's in a new place. For some reason, he believes that he needs protection. It's probably the case that he needs to secure water rights. This is what happens later on with all these wells being dug and stopped up and back and forth and all that stuff. So he's looking for water rights for his flocks, for his herds. And so what he ends up doing is that he initiates this relationship for his own security, for the security of his stuff, of his clan. And because he doesn't have a daughter to offer, he presents Sarah, and deceitfully presents Sarah as his sister instead of his wife.
So he basically gave his wife away, because if he would have, if Abimelech would have accepted her, she wouldn't have been able to go back to Abraham.
According to what?
I mean,
because Abimelech does take her in.
Yeah, if God had to intervene.
Oh, yes, yeah.
He would have just been,
right.
As far as he was concerned, he was giving his wife away.
Yes, yeah. Which, that jeopardizes the whole, I mean,
he got a whole bunch of water.
He did, he got what he wanted out of it. But that just kind of highlights the temporal, like, he is totally thinking he's not thinking according to the promises of God. He's not thinking according to the one promise.
God had promised him the son.
Right, through Sarah, yes. And so he is not, at best, he is not thinking clearly. This may be the circumstance where he has, there is a pressing issue that's right in front of his face and he can't see anything else. He is in the fog of the immediate, of the pressure of the immediate. So that's where he is.
And it's, what's amazing is Sarah is probably 70 or 80 years old at this point-ish.
She's older than that. Yeah, she's 90, almost 90.
So yeah. How many years has happened before Isaac?
So that's actually another thing, is that this may be showing that there's been some kind of, like, why would Abimelech want Sarah? Why would he say, well, this is great?
Sure.
Because it's not just the taking of a wife, it's also the children that would come from. So there's actually a thought out there that this is an indication that there's been some kind of rejuvenation with Sarah. That she doesn't look as old as she is. She looks attractive. And that may be what's going on, part of what's going on here. And that this demonstrates, yeah, Sarah is, she's going to produce, she's going to conceive. But the point of just, like, she is my sister, this actually sets a precedent that Abraham's descendants will do this kind of thing. You see it with Isaac, but then you also see it with, not she is my sister, but having this need to establish these political, diplomatic relationships with other rulers. And that at the expense of trusting God, mm-hmm. Right? So that's the whole problem with Solomon. That's what Jeremiah tells the royal court, don't trust in Egypt. Isaiah says the same thing about not trusting in this alliance against Assyria. Don't trust in them, trust in the Lord. And when they do, the Lord comes through, right? Hezekiah trusts the Lord, and 185,000 Assyrians are slaughtered in one night. But even then, Hezekiah isn't like consistent there. So you just had this inconsistency throughout, and it's, you see it from the beginning. It was always there. And that's the case with us too. There's inconsistency. This is part of the reality of living in a fallen world, living with the remnants of the flesh, living by faith in the promises of God, but then being confronted by unforeseen circumstances or being overtaken by fear, insecurity, so on and so forth. But that's part of the lesson to learn here, is that what's going on here is that compromise will come. Compromise, even on the doorstep of receiving the promise of God in this son that's coming, compromise can even show up on the doorstep of the fulfillment of that promise. And so we should never take anything for granted about ourselves or assume the best about ourselves, is that we will fall into the same pattern of sin as what Abraham gets into. And insecurity, fear of man, that's what's going to come up later on. So this is the setup. This is all introduction to what goes on in the passage. So anything to add to or ask about this? Hopefully what this does is it makes a more sense in its historical and cultural situation of Abraham saying, she is my sister. And Abimelech saying, okay, she's my wife. That kind of thing. So hopefully that gives us a little bit of a background understanding of what's going on here. Okay. So now verses 2 through 7, the rest of verse 2 into verse 7, this is God's confrontation. So, but the first thing that happens here is that he sends the king of Gerar, Abimelech, sends and takes Sarah. This word took, that means this is an official, this is language for marriage relationship. So to take a woman, you're taking her to be your wife. So that's what Abimelech does. So as far as everybody's concerned, Sarah is Abimelech's wife. And that puts that's a problem there, because if she's compromised, sexually, then that actually calls into question the legitimacy of Isaac, who's about to come, right? So this is a big deal. The promises of God are on the line here, which is why God intervenes, and he intervenes on behalf of his promises, but on behalf of Abraham and Sarah, because Sarah's complicit in this, as we'll see. So what God does is he intervenes in verse 3, and in verse 4 and 5, Abimelech gives his defense, and it's a great defense, and then God pronounces a sentence in verses 6 and 7. So God is going to intervene here, and again, he intervenes on behalf of Abraham. So God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man. That would be the sentence right there, right? You are a dead man. Nothing like getting attention, getting someone's attention, but here's the subject that we're going to talk about. I am God and you are dead. You're a dead man. Why? Because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. So God exposes it. Right? God exposes this. Abraham's not going to do it. Sarah's not going to do it. Abimelech doesn't know anything about it. God exposes it. So the reason why Abimelech is a dead man, which doesn't mean he's about to die, but if he doesn't do what God says, he's going to die, right? So he's a dead man because of this, for she is a man's wife. Now, why does God care about so the promises of God, but why else does God care about this? Why is it any business of God's what Abimelech does with Sarah, who happens to be another man's wife?
He made promises he was going to keep.
Okay, he made promises. Okay, what's another reason?
Well, he can't be a part of sin.
What? God?
God can't be a part of sin.
Right, God's not going to be a part of sin. So, but what's the sin here?
It goes against his creative.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so this is going back to Genesis 2:18 to 25, of this, the man and the woman, God presenting the woman to the man, and she's his wife, he's her husband, they're one flesh. And so it's a sin, so to disrupt, to break the marriage is a sin against God. And we'll see that Abimelech actually shares that conviction. So verse four gives us some background information. It's parenthetical. So, this is the beginning of his self-defense. So verse four, now Abimelech had not approached her. So not touched her. Now we're going to find out later why that is. All right. And it's God working even before the dream. Now Abimelech had not approached her. So he said, so I haven't touched her. But the way that he begins is, Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Now, why does he say people? He's just one man, right?
But wouldn't it affect his whole good family, his whole good kingdom?
And so here's corporate solidarity. What happens to the, so corporate together, solidarity, the one and the many stand together. Okay, so what happens to the one in this case, the king, the consequences will fall on the people, and also vice versa. So this is, and this is part of the reason why it makes sense in God's economy, where Jesus's righteousness can be declared to be ours. Our sin is forgiven in Jesus's death, even though he's hasn't sinned. It's corporate solidarity. This is also why Adam's sin can be. We are held responsible for sin because we're in Adam's line, right? So Romans 5. But he's recognizing the severity. If I'm dead, it's not just going to be me. This is going to be my people too. But I didn't do anything wrong. Did he not himself say to me, she is my sister, and she herself, Sarah, said, he's my brother, right? So she's in on it too. Now, she's complicit. She may not be as responsible as Abraham is, because it is his idea, what we're going to find out. But Abimelech's point is to say, look, I didn't do anything wrong here in the integrity, or I didn't knowingly do anything wrong. You see how God still holds him responsible, even though he didn't know he did something wrong, right? It's still sin, right? So, and that's important for us to be reminded of, and then also to help others see that even though you don't know it's sin, doesn't mean it's not sin, right? So, but in the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this. So when he says integrity, what's another word for integrity, or what is integrity?
Reputation.
It's reputation, but it's a certain kind of reputation. You're a certain kind of person.
Sincere.
Moral, ethical, yeah, moral.
Honest.
Like, is there any, like, hidden agenda in somebody who's full, who has integrity? No, so, like, whole.
Upright, pure,
yeah, things like that. So there's not like, he went into this with the purest of motives, is what he's saying. I didn't go into this thinking that this was adultery at all, or that I was doing anything wrong. So it's in the integrity of my heart that I've done this. In the innocence of my hands, I have done this. So that's his defense.
But he still admitted he did it.
He still admitted that, yeah, this has happened, but he's saying it wasn't intentional. So he's just appealing. Like he knows that he basically has, he deserves death for this, because it is adultery. But it's key that he hasn't touched her, and it's key for him. It's also key for Sarah and for Abraham. But even then, God plays a role in him not Abimelech not touching her. So God's response, verses 6 and 7, yes, then God said to him in the dream, so remember, all of this is happening in the dream, Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart. So what does he said? What does God say there? He affirms that, right? He says, I know integrity of your heart, right? It's true. God doesn't deny that. He affirms it, right? But he also says, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. So Abimelech is full of integrity. He didn't do anything knowingly wrong. But God is also doing something. I kept you. I restrained you. So he's saying, I've restrained you. I have prevented you from doing this. Which, if you're a husband and a wife, there should be nothing that prevents the consummation, right? And so what we have here is there's an affirmation of Abimelech's integrity and an assertion from God about his restraining activity. So Abimelech didn't do anything intentionally wrong, and God didn't allow Abimelech to sin. He restrained the sexual sin. So what you have here, this is a classic text on God's sovereignty and a man's freedom, responsibility too, but a man's freedom. Did Abimelech do anything that he didn't want to do? No. Did God coerce him? Did God force him to do anything that he didn't want to do? No. But God is still saying, I have kept you from doing that. I've restrained you, right? And so we tend to think that our freedom and God's sovereignty, they're at odds with one another. They're in tension with one another. They're, you know, well, since we can't explain it, then it's, you know, it's mysterious or whatever. And those things, the mysteriousness of it may be true, but these aren't things that are in tension. They're the way that Spurgeon said it was, these are friends. I don't try to reconcile friends. Like, how do you reconcile God's sovereignty and human freedom? And Spurgeon says, I don't, who needs to reconcile friends? They're friends. That's one of the best things that I've heard about this. And you see it right here in the same sentence. God is sovereign. Why didn't Abimelech touch her? Well, because God kept him from touching her. Why didn't Abimelech touch her? Because why did he not sin in this case? Because he did this in the integrity of his heart. So this is just a great text to get your hands around what is God's sovereignty and human responsibility, human freedom, specifically freedom, look like. Abimelech didn't do anything he didn't want to do, and he wasn't forced from being kept from them. Now, yeah, we'll get to the end and see why it is that he didn't touch her. So therefore, I kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. So I restrained you. Now then, here's what you need to do. Now that you know the truth, now that the truth has come to light, here's how you need to respond. And it's based on this response, whether or not you live or die. Now then, return the man's wife. Why? Because he's a prophet. And he'll pray for you, so that he'll pray for you and you shall live. So the reason why Abimelech is a dead man is because Abraham has not prayed for him yet. What? So, I mean, just a couple of things there. Like, Abraham was the one who did this in the first place. Mm-hmm. And now he's going to pray so that Abimelech lives? Like, what is...
Would that have to do with Abraham owning his own sin? If he was praying for Abimelech?
Perhaps. I mean, that may be involved there, but this, so it may be involved there, but that's definitely not what's emphasized here. The reason that why Abimelech's going to get better, he's going to be healed, is because Abraham's a prophet and he's going to pray. But this confirms also the second thing that would happen, that happens here, is that this confirms what we learned in Genesis 18, which is that God gives Abraham insight into his purposes and his plans. Abraham prays, God listens to Abraham. Aren't you glad that your sin does not keep your God from listening to you? And why is that? It's because he's for us. He's decided to bless. And that's been confirmed, solidified, established, secured in Jesus. So all we have to do is ask. Danny, you look like you want to say something.
No, I'm just thinking with the question. Do you think there was anything in Abraham's mind that giving Sarah to this guy would actually, he could come back the next day and say, she's married, and give him a reason to physically go to war against the guy? And
so, like, Abraham setting up a war over this? I don't know.
Because, I mean, Abimelech realized that, hey, she's married. That's bad. And it would give Abraham a reason to go to war against him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just,
yeah. It's still set up by deception. I don't. Okay, so Abraham's going to mediate for Abimelech, and again, they're just different things here. Abraham prayed in Genesis 18 to spare the wicked for the sake of the righteous. Now he prays on behalf of the righteous. Abimelech has not done anything wrong, and it's still Abraham who's praying, and he's going to pray on behalf of the righteous. So you kind of see how prayer does work, a little bit about how prayer works, what's involved in prayer, as far as how this establishes a precedent. Praying on behalf of the righteous, praying to spare the wicked for the sake of the righteous, that sort of thing. But this also establishes a third thing, that Abraham is the channel of God's blessing to the nations. And God's blessing here would be sparing, being merciful, listening to Abraham, forgiving this sin. So Abraham is the channel of God's blessing to the nations. But it's also, you see that Abimelech and his people, he is claiming uprightness, moral uprightness. We're going to see that Abraham doesn't think that's the case when he comes into town, but this is actually the case. Like the one who comes out on top, who should come out on top morally, is Abimelech. And as a ruler of his people, this reflects on his people. But what this also indicates is that Abimelech and his people are not part of God's people in and of themselves by their own moral uprightness. So just because you're morally upright does not mean you're part of God's people. So you see how that's working? Like, it's only through Abraham here. So the morally upright need, and we're talking horizontally, right? We're not talking in the vertical sense of no, there's none who are righteous. Like, no, when you look at this, Abimelech is righteous and Abraham is not. When you're just comparing the two of them. But the righteous Abimelech, he needs God's blessing through Abraham, just like everyone else. So this is fascinating how all of these things are kind of coming together in this one episode. The promise of God, but then also the role of Abraham amongst the nations, and the role of prayer, prophet, all of that. So he's a prophet. He's going to pray for you. You shall live. But if you don't return her, you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. So Abimelech's right to recognize it's not just me. This is my people too. This may just be talking about his family, his house, but it's probably a both and here. So that is God's sentence, and this is demonstrating God is totally committed to Abraham based on his promise, not based on Abraham's conduct. We have seen godly conduct from Abraham, and we're going to see more godly conduct. We're going to see more obedience from Abraham. Well, we don't see it here. And what that demonstrates is that God's promise, God's plan to bless, God's intent to bless Abraham is not conditioned on Abraham's conduct, which is why in the end Israel will be saved. It's not because of their obedience. It is because of God's purposes and plans and intent to bless, and bless for the sake of Abraham. So any this conversation between Abimelech and God, anything to add or to ask about it?
Do you think there was any fear of God in the camp of Abimelech?
I definitely think so, based on what happens in verse 8.
Before.
Oh, before that?
Because Abraham says, surely this has no fear of God.
I think there was, because of how he responds to the charge of adultery. Yeah. So Abraham totally misreads the situation. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, so let's move on to verses 8 to 13. So now Abimelech, he responds, and his servants respond, and then he goes after Abraham here. So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told them all these things. And the men were very much afraid. So we need to remember that, especially what Danny asked. This is part of where the answer comes from. So he gets up like, would you be able to sleep after this? No, we're up. Calls his servants. He says, here's what happened. And it's not just Abimelech. It is all the men. So there is the fear of God that is on display here, which totally makes Abraham look like a fool with what he's about to say. So then Abimelech calls Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us? What have you done to us? Our lives are on the line because of what you have done. And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? So again, me, kingdom. So this is all the people. He recognizes that judgment of God on him is going to be have a devastating effect on his people. This also reflects that, man, Abimelech, he is a good ruler. He is not just about himself. He cares about his people. Like this guy, if there was anybody God would choose, like if you just like rewind, like who am I going to choose? Obviously, God didn't do this, but Abimelech would be the guy, right? It's like, man, he's great. Also, you know, he could have chosen Melchizedek. But that does kind of bring up there's so many better people than Abraham. Why Abraham? Well, there you go. To ask the question is to answer it. You have brought on us a great sin. Again, the great sin is adultery. Recognizes a sin against God. You have done to me things that ought not to be done. Like he is going after, he recognizes this and declares it to be a fundamentally moral issue. Whenever this phrase ought not to be done, this whole thing right here. So this is used a couple more times, and it's both in the context of rape. Dinah's rape, Tamar's rape. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, you ought not to be, this ought not to be done. In the first case with Dinah's rape, it's the brothers, Levi and Simeon, who tell Jacob, this ought not to have been done. This does not happen in Israel. And same thing with Tamar, with her half brother, Amnon, this ought not to be done. And so this is a fundamentally moral issue. And so Abimelech, he's shocked by this, and he's morally repulsed by this, by what Abraham has done, the one who possesses the promises of God. It's just amazing. So that's the initial thing that he says. And then the second thing that he adds to it is basically asks why. What did you see that you did this thing? Why did you do this? Why did you think that this was, that you had to do this? And Abraham answers. And Abraham, at first, he's self-condemning here. This is about the only good thing that he does here. So he self-condemns. I did it because I thought there's no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. So they don't fear God. So what that means is that, so this is what he's thinking. They don't fear God. And what that means is that they would rather commit murder than adultery. So they're going to kill me so that they can have Sarah. That's what he's thinking. So he doesn't actually answer the question, but he's like, here's what I was thinking. I thought you're going to kill me. And he totally, and based on what we've seen from Abimelech, what we've seen in verse 8, he totally gets it wrong. He totally misreads the situation.
But was it customary for them to take, I mean, usually it's like a brother or somebody that takes the man's wife when he dies. So mm-hmm. would it be customary for just any man?
No. No. There would still be... Once you're married into the family, then you have we call it levirate marriage. That's how we describe it. So that's where you have the brother raising up seed for the deceased brother. But Abimelech's not part of the family. So this would have been no. Like everybody in the area who had any kind of moral foundation would have responded the same way to this. And that's why Pharaoh responds the way that he does back in chapter 12. Like everybody, this is wrong. Like you're not only, it's not only that you're doing this, it's that the consequences that come from this, like people are executed for this. And you're deceiving into that kind of penalty. Now, another thing is, like, there's no fear of God in this place, and they'll kill me. So, again, it comes out to, like, Abraham is not trusting God here. And so what that means is that yesterday's faith, like, he's a man of faith. He continues to believe God's promises, even though here it doesn't look like he does at all. But this does give us an application that yesterday's faith will not count as today's. Our walking by faith in God's promises, walking by faith in Christ a week ago is not going to count for how we need to do the same thing today, right? That's one lesson that to learn from this is that the recent experience of intimacy with God that Abraham has had in chapter 17 and 18 does not carry over into this. He has to continue trusting God. So he's self-condemning here. And the reason why he's self-condemning is because he says, I did it, right? He doesn't try to hide it. But then he's self-excusing in verses 12 and 13. Besides, she indeed is my sister. I wasn't actually lying to you. Like, oh, Abraham, you deserve a smack in the face.
Sounds like a
teenager. She is indeed my sister. The daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. So this reminds of the man in the garden. Mm-hmm. Why did you eat? Like the woman that you gave to me. What? And it actually kind of gets into the woman too. It's like, well, the serpent deceived me, and I. So it's just, you know, like there's this confession, but then there's also this excusing, this rationale. That goes on. That seems to be an easy, natural thing for us to do. Like we'll be honest up to a point, and then it's like, well, I'm not completely off my rocker here. I mean, she is my half sister. Like Abraham, come on.
Man. And once again, Abimelech owned his. He said, "I've sinned against you."
Yes.
And then. Abraham's like, well,
yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, once again, it's
flipped. Abimelech is like the guy, like, man, this guy's great. And even in how he responds at the end of chapter 21 to the issue with the wells, like he says, I didn't know anything about this. Why didn't you tell me? And he slowly straightens it out. Like, man, I want him for my king. This would be great.
And I just think it's interesting how it says that when Abraham said, I did it because I thought. So he was kind of leaning on his own understanding.
Yep, that's great.
Rather than pausing and saying,
yeah,
you know, because sometimes we act and we react and we don't stop and say, Lord, and remember truths.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah.
You know.
What is true? Help me see, open my, yeah. That's great. That's great. So he excuses, but then he says, this has been the case the entire time. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, what chapter is this? This is Genesis 11 and 12, right? I said to her, to Sarah, this is the kindness you must do to me. I think the word here is like loving kindness. It's faithfulness. It's fidelity. It may just be kindness. This is the kindness you must do to me. At every place to which we come, say of me, he is my brother. So what she did in affirming that he's my brother to Pharaoh, this is here to bracket. The entire time, Abraham is nursing unbelief. He is nursing this unbelief. That he's going to hold something back, which is, it sheds light on Lot, how he thinks about Lot. Here's the man is justified. He's reckoned righteous by God, Genesis 15, and yet he's still also at the same time nursing unbelief, and it's been going on the whole time. Now, in an odd way, that can be encouraging. That God does not give up on us when we have a day where we're like, God, I believe you like 50%. That's all I got today. Now, I'm not justifying that at all, but God doesn't say, well, we're done. He doesn't do that, right? And he didn't do that with Abraham, and Abraham totally deserved it. We totally deserve it, and God doesn't do that. In fact, Abraham is the one who's going to rectify the situation. But this is just totally striking. Verse 13, this whole time, Abraham nursing unbelief. So, verses 14 to 16, Abimelech, he makes reparations, and Abraham somehow comes out on top on all of this, and it's because of the blessing of God. Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen, so this is more wealth again. This is also power, authority, prestige, male servants, female servants, and he gives them to Abraham, and he returns Sarah, his wife, to him. This was the big thing. So Abimelech goes above and beyond what God says, right? And the main thing is to return Sarah, his wife, and that's what he does. And notice that it's his wife, not his sister, right? The Moses is saying, this, don't listen to Abraham, what he just said. This is the case. She is his wife. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you. So remember, in chapter 12, Pharaoh kicks him out, says, get out of here. Abimelech says, wherever you want to go. That's Abimelech, who is this guy? And why do we know more about him? But not just to Abraham, but also to Sarah, he speaks, behold, I have given, look at this, your brother, 1,000 pieces of silver. Now, this may be
sarcasm
or just indignation.
Yeah.
This is resentment. Yeah. But also 1,000 pieces of silver. This is a huge amount of money. So a bride price typically would have been around 50 pieces of silver. So however much it is, we're just combining numbers right now. There's we have access to actually how much Babylonian day laborers earned. They earned, and so this is just for comparison's sake, and it's not totally a one-to-one comparison, but just stick with it. So a Babylonian day laborer earned 1/2 of a piece of silver per month. I mean, this is a ton of money. And what is it saying? It's a sign. It represents your innocence, your purity, your vindication in the eyes of all who are with you. So, and this is why they can stay in the land, because there, Abimelech has done nothing wrong here. And not only has he done nothing wrong, but she is totally vindicated. he did not touch her at all. So, so Sarah's sexual integrity is protected. Abimelech shows this prompt obedience, and even taking a shot at Abraham with your brother. So Abimelech makes these reparations. He goes above and beyond. He's just a representative guy. Like, this is somebody you want ruling over you. and then Abraham ends up doing what it is that God said he would do. Abraham prayed to God, and God healed. So the prayer goes into the healing. God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. So why is it, and we'll just finish it up, for the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So a couple of things here. Why is it that Abimelech never touched Sarah? God prevented him. And what kinds of means did God use in order to prevent him? What?
He was impotent.
Yeah, he was probably severely sick. Yeah. So
that's the healing that he needed.
Yes.
He's ill.
Yes, because okay. He's ill. So we have to infer that he's ill, so he's bedridden or whatever. But then also, he healed his wife and his female slaves with the result that they would bear. So they would conceive and bear children, which means that this was not an overnight thing. Like, it wasn't, this is, now, it's not so long, because we have a year between Genesis 18 and Genesis 21, when Isaac is born. So this time next year, at the appointed time next year, I will come. That's Genesis 18. So we have a year between that day and Genesis 21 when Isaac is born. So within that is Genesis 20. And so this is probably anywhere between, this is really only a matter of, it's probably less than a month. So 2 to 3 weeks, maybe pushing the better part of a month. That's how long they're in this situation. And so a prolonged sickness, and then also there's no conception, obviously going on. Now, the female slaves, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're concubines of Abimelech, but that they're, female slaves who are married to male slaves, but there's nobody's getting pregnant, which would be an odd thing in a big house like Abimelech has. But the reason that the Lord had closed these wombs is totally because of Sarah, which this implies one more thing. If Abimelech had touched her, if Abimelech had approached her, she would have gotten pregnant. Mm-hmm. So what this does is in saying God had closed the wombs, what this does is if you look at it from another angle, and it's confirmed in the next chapter, in chapter 21, that she is able to conceive now. The Lord has opened her womb according to his promise. So utterly, the house, the women in the house being, their wombs being utterly shut, shows that Sarah is able to conceive.
Is there anything in that sentence structure that I don't know about, but I always took it as if Abimelech was impotent, and this was because God had closed his, in a sense, just like, because it all was a part of that sentence. He healed Abimelech and his wife.
It could be, but because it's only one man, I think that he's totally prevented from a union with anybody. So I think he's more laid out. He's been sick in bed for weeks. That's how I'm taking it.
I don't think that, because he's pretty obviously responsible. I mean, responsive when God speaks to him.
Sure, yeah. But haven't allowed you to touch her, like, so you hadn't approached her. Like, so it's not just like he's tried and failed. He hasn't gotten anywhere close to her, but that's also the case with Abimelech's own wife. So not Sarah, but his wife. So that's why I think that, like, he's incapacitated somehow to do this. And that's the Lord's prevention. Now, it could be just more in a in more of a providential way, so that there's no so it could be in that case, but it's still, I don't know. I think, yeah, we don't know. We don't know. But this does bridge into chapter 21. The healing does go into the opening of the wombs. It does, and it demonstrates that God is the one who opens the womb. But it also brings up the question of why is Sarah's womb, why has it been shut, and is it open, right? Now, we find out in chapter 21 that it is. But this actually has been part of the issue particularly since Genesis 15, is why can't Sarah have a baby? Why can't Sarah conceive? And ultimately, it comes down to here's God's timing. The promised son was always going to be born precisely when God had for him to be born. So God's sovereign in opening the womb. God's timing will always prevail, and God's promises are assured by God's power. So this is a good text to be in. And in addition to, I guess, in connection with a passage like 1 Samuel, with Hannah, with anybody who's a younger woman or a woman in her 30s who's concerned, hasn't had children, wants to have children and is not having children, what's going on? So this is, entrust yourself to the Lord. He's the one who opens the womb. Don't go after these other scientific ways to have children. Keep yourself from that. Continue to trust God. This passage and the passage in 1 Samuel with Hannah would be a good passage to go to for the situations like that. But last but not least, we need to learn from the good and the bad of Abraham, and this is the bad. This is one of the places where Abraham is not doing well. And so we need to learn from that. And this comes about from insecurity, from a lack of trust in God's promises, also a fear of man. And so you see where a compromised faith is built on not being able to see past the fog, the immediate circumstance that's in front of you. You need to be able to see beyond that. But then also seeing the good about God in Abraham's bad. What is God doing in blessing this man? Which, to ask that question is also to ask the question of us. And it's because he's totally committed. Because of his grace, because of his mercy, because of his intent to bless. And so we should be encouraged by that. When we fall into sin, when we recognize that, and we can be encouraged to confess our sin and know that he will answer us according to Jesus's death in our place. So that's what I have. Anything to add or ask about that? Okay. The next time Isaac's going to be born. Yes, it's finally here. Genesis 21. All right. So let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the time that you've given to us. Thank you that in your providence there are good rulers like Abimelech and we do ask that you would provide for our country a good ruler. This is a blessing from you that when a country has a good ruler. So we do ask on behalf of our country that you would provide for us a good ruler. We're also amazed at your grace and at your mercy. That when this good ruler Abimelech, he is the one who should be commended in here, and you confront him, in order to point to Abraham as the channel of your blessing to the nations. This is humbling to us, and it magnifies your mercy, your grace, and shuts our mouths. To ever think that you look upon the good deeds of men and women, and think that we can commend ourselves to you because of those things. No, it's all according to your grace and your mercy. So help us to live according to that truth. Help us to interact with you as our Father, pray to you as our Father, with that in mind, that you intend to bless and you intend to show yourself merciful and full of grace toward us, just as you have with Abraham. So help us, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
Thanks, Noah.
Yeah.
Thanks.